The fatal police shooting of a 15-year-old boy in Greece earlier this month has sent shockwaves throughout the country, with thousands of mostly young people revolting. The protests began in Athens, in an Athens district called Exarchia, described by one commentator in Spiegel as a, quote, traditional haunt of artists, anarchists, and left-wing intellectuals. The protests then spread to most of the country and continue to this day. Shops have been vandalized, police stations and banks have been firebombed, officers have been doused with red paint, and unions have initiated mass work stoppages. Police have responded with tear gas and flash grenades against demonstrators. There have been demonstrations in solidarity with the protesters in various European cities, including London, Moscow, Paris, and Berlin. While the death of the schoolboy sparked off the protests, the main underlying issues facing Greeks, particularly youth, include government corruption and the poor state of the economy. Joining us this morning on the line to help explain what exactly is going on in Greece is Greek-American activist Pavlos Stavropoulos. Welcome to Uprising, Pavlos.
Thank you, Sonali. I appreciate you having me on.
First, why don't we start with the historical significance of the place where these protests started, sparked off by the killing of this boy. How significant is this Athens district where it all began?
Exarchia is a district that is often referred to in the mainstream media as lawless, which actually may be a fairly accurate description, but in a very different meaning than most people associate with that. This is an area that has been, in many respects, self-managed for a very long time, and it's an area where police are generally not welcome by the residents, by the shopkeepers, as well as the people who hang around there. I've visited the area on several occasions, and it is not uncommon that if a police cruiser tries to pass through the area, that it will be welcomed with chairs and bottles and everything else that can be around. So the very presence of the police there will be perceived as provocative by people who hang around in the area, especially around the square.
And historically, in the 60s and 70s, how active were people there?
Well, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that while the 60s, we saw a tremendous amount of protest activity in Western Europe, between 1967 and 1974, Greece had a military government. Therefore, the level of social and political activity was severely repressed. The Polytechnic, the main school that where the student rebellion was took place in 1973, in November of 1973, is right outside of Exarchia. Exarchia is behind it. So this is an area that is traditionally known as having a lot of student activism. But again, things like 1968, we had tanks in the streets.
Let's talk a little bit about the police repression before and after the shooting of this young man, Alexandros Grigoropoulos. Outside of Exarchia and even inside, what has the police repression, well, I should say outside of Exarchia and in the rest of Greece, how strong has police repression been in general, particularly of young people?
Police repression has been fairly severe throughout the years. One of the things that's very interesting is that the Greek police has never really been accepted by very large segments of Greek society, of Greek population, partially because of the reputation that it acquired during the military government, but also because of its behavior ever since then. There have been multiple incidents of very, very severe police brutality targeted towards immigrants. There was a young Pakistani immigrant who was basically bludgeoned to death by the police while he was standing in line outside of immigration offices to petition for asylum. There were other incidents at a local protest against a landfill in Lefkimi. A 16-year-old boy who was driving his motorcycle was hit by the police. He lost control of his vehicle, of his motorcycle. The motorcycle crashed into a 43-year-old woman who subsequently died of brain injuries and also lost the baby. Those are two not atypical events that happened relatively recently that can give you an idea of what's been going on in Greece in terms of police brutality. However, lethal force, outright lethal force, pulling out a gun and shooting is something that is considered socially and legally unacceptable in Greece, which is why we see the response to the murder of Alexandros Grigoropoulos precipitate this kind of social uprising.
And it's interesting because here in the United States, that is a type of incident that occurs, you know, every other day, it seems, and people may not understand the significance of the Greek reaction to this police shooting. Police shootings are so much more common here, but thank you for putting it into perspective. I want to ask you, Pavlos, to talk about now who are the people, what are the movements that are involved in the current revolt within Greece today? Is it mostly young people? Is it the unions? Who are they?
Well, and I appreciate you calling it a revolt, because a lot of times the mainstream media outside of Greece refers it as the riots. And I think it is very important to put that into context. Mobs riot, but people rise up. And this is a social uprising. The Greek word that gets used in Greece is exegerse, which can be translated as either insurrection or as uprising. And that's very, very important to understand of what's going on there. It starts out with a reaction from predominantly anarchist groups. Exarchia and that area is an area where anarchists hang out a lot, but it very quickly evolves into a much broader social uprising. For one thing, it is not just university students, but it is also high school students that came out en masse, particularly on the Monday following the shooting. But you also had a lot of other social groupings that emerged. You had unemployed people, you had retired people, you had housewives, you had many, many different sectors of societies that began to emerge. At the same time, you also have some political organizations, political parties, specifically the Communist Party of Greece, and a lot of the unions that are under very, very tight party control in Greece that began to try to control the uprising and control what's going on, because the situation was very much out of control. There was nobody who was particularly in charge. And you see the opposition to that attempt by particularly the Communist Party to control the situation in the fact that in the last several days we have seen the Communist Party offices being firebombed in multiple cities, as well as the takeover of the GSCE building in Athens. That is the equivalent of taking over the headquarters of the AFL-CIO in the United States. This was taken over by anarchists and by workers and by people in the community who decided to liberate it and create it as a free space for all workers, free not just from state control, but also from party control.
So there's a lot of sort of internal wrangling, if you will, between the various political movements.
One of the things that you see is, I think, the uprising is, in many respects, starts out as anarchist, but it begins to attract anybody within society who is interested in having a direct relationship and direct control over their lives and over their destinies. So it becomes an opposition against the state, against the police, against the banks, but also against those political entities who are attempting to control social movements and to shape them to fit their own agenda. So it's really a demand for a direct control, for an unmediated control of people's lives and of people's destinies and of people's social relationships, and an opposition against any kind of movement, agency, organization, or authority that attempts to dictate what people's lives should be like, whether that's the government or whether that is the Communist Party.
My guest is Pavlos Stavropoulos, a Greek-American activist. We're talking about what's happening in Greece and what has been happening since the beginning of the month. Pavlos, what exactly is motivating all of these various movements and ordinary Greeks as well? I mean, I mentioned government corruption and the poor state of the economy. Those are the two things that are cited, at least in the mainstream media. What is your analysis of the underlying motivation for people to want to take control of their lives and to want to rise up against the government?
Well, I think that to a large extent, we have to understand that in this kind of a spontaneous social uprising, there's probably as many reasons for why people are in the streets as there are people in the streets.
Hmm.
And as such, I'm giving my own perspective and my perspective from the outside. I think this is really important to state because all too often analysis is provided as this is the definitive analysis, and I will make no such claim. I think that what starts out on the first few days is sheer rage. It's just pure, raw rage that this is something that is socially unacceptable. You do not kill one of our kids, period. That's it. And if you do, there will be massive retaliation and massive repercussions for that. And that's what we see initially. What is interesting is that this begins to evolve into a broader setting where people are beginning to say this insurrection creates an open space. And within that space, we can now begin to think of what would social relationships look like when they are direct, when they're not mediated, when they're not controlled. I've talked to a lot of people who have been inside occupied city halls and inside other occupied or liberated buildings, and I think that's one of the very interesting and exciting processes that happened, particularly in the latter part of the week, especially last week into the beginning part of this week. And I ask them, what are your demands? What are your expectations? And they say, we don't know yet. Our first plan is to create a space where popular assemblies can constitute, where people can come in, and it is within that free and that open space that we can begin to even imagine what our demands are. Because living daily life, going to work, watching TV, having to deal with the mundane and the controlled and the mediated social relationships that people are accustomed to, the imagination of what would our demands be could not even find room to express itself. So this is one of, to me, the very intriguing things, is that the insurrection is its own demand in some respects. It is to say that we want to be able to imagine a life different than what we've got it, but we can't for as long as we live the way that we do. So the open spaces, the liberated spaces, the popular assemblies, create those conditions upon which those demands can begin to express themselves.
Now, I understand that as part of the organizing strategies, and I'd like to talk about that for a little bit, is a very innovative and exciting use of media, various forms of media, new media as well as traditional media. What can you tell us about how many of the organizers of the demonstrations are getting the word out?
Well, the interesting thing is that I don't think we can really think of organizers in a very traditional sense.
Mm-hmm.
Events happen. You have the word that gets used in Greece a lot by groups is protovoulia, which means initiative. The groups that take initiative, and some of those initiatives resonate within the people, and those become events. So people take use a very diverse way, a very diverse means of getting the word out. From the very typical flyers, posters, putting things up, handing things at the market by hand, to text messaging, especially among the younger generation. Text messaging has been very commonly used, and it was what notified hundreds and thousands of people what was going on in the first few hours. The Greek Indie Media, athens.indymedia.org, and to a lesser or more local extent, patras.indymedia.org, have also been very active means of communicating with people. But there are also some other tactics that have been utilized, because a lot of the mainstream media, even in Greece, has tried to bury or completely disinform and disorient the situation around the social uprising.
Now, I understand the state television station was also stormed a few days ago.
Yes, and this is what happened. Initially, people started doing takeovers, short-term takeovers, 30 minutes to 45 minutes of radio stations. They would just take over radio stations. They would do short broadcasts of their messages. They would read their statements. They would tell people what's going on, and, of course, they would have to leave them. But the main state TV station, NET, was taken over for a short period of time just a couple of days ago, literally at 3 p.m. local time, in the middle of the news broadcast, right at the time where the news broadcast was effectively saying people how wonderful the prime minister had been doing about everything. People walked in, dropped a banner in front of the cameras, and started chanting and telling people, shut off your television, get out into the streets, that's where you will find the truth. It's very interesting to see what the response of the state TV channel was. Initially, they dropped the sound, and then they cut off the video. And about 2 or 3 minutes later, when people were escorted out, they went back on the air, given zero explanation as to what had happened, and proceeded as if nothing had gone on. This gives you an idea of the level in which definitely the state-owned media, but even a lot of the mainstream media in Greece is trying to ignore what's happening because they don't want to give voice to the people. The people are saying, we will give voice to ourselves. We don't need anybody else. We will utilize whatever medium is available to us at any moment that it might be available to us.
My guest is Pavlos Stavropoulos, a Greek-American activist, talking about the ongoing revolts in Greece. And we're talking also about how people have been getting the word out, the takeovers of radio and TV stations, very exciting and amazing events unfolding in Greece. Pavlos, how is the government responding, and what has the government's justification been, or what have their what have they been saying at press conferences, and how are they trying to get the situation under control from their perspective?
The initial government response was in many respects very hands off. Given that the first couple of days we see a tremendous amount of anger against because of the murder of Alexandros, they wanted to make sure that there wasn't going to be another shooting. In many respects, that may have been a miscalculation on their part because they thought that people were going to blow off steam and things were going to calm down, which, of course, historically doesn't pan out. In 1985, the last time that a 15-year-old student was killed by the police, the incidents and the reaction lasted for months and years in some respects. So I think the police lost control, both because they backed off a little bit and because of the ferocity of the social response. Ever since then, they've been trying to say, and this is not just the government party. This is also PASOK, the socialist, the main opposition party. This is also the Communist Party of Greece, which is the third largest party in Greece. All three have been condemning the violence, condemning what's going on, and they've been jockeying for political position, trying to say that, no, there should be peaceful protests and there should be reforms, and effectively, as long as you have me, whether me is PASOK or KUKUE, the Communist Party, in power, then things will be better. The Synaspismos and Syriza, the left coalition, which is the fourth largest political presence in parliament, but it is a coalition of smaller parties, has been the only one that has not explicitly condemned the actions in the streets, while it has definitely spoken out against what it refers to blind violence, and it has called for peaceful protest. It has stopped short of condemning the actions in the streets, and I think even though they may not like exactly what is happening, they recognize it for what it is. But it is out of control. Nobody controls it, no political party, no union, no the government, the police. This is a true uprising in the sense that the people get to determine what is happening. Nobody is organizing it in any grand fashion. Nobody's directing it. It's very spontaneous, very organic, and as such, relatively difficult to both predict and to fully analyze and understand in the moment, because every moment changes.
Finally, Pavlos, let me ask you what you think will happen. I know it is difficult to predict from what you have been saying, but just from looking at Greek history, where do you think this is going to go?
Well, there's a couple of interesting things. One of the things, two specific things that we have not noted is that at this point, at last count that I have, there are over 800 high schools that have been taken over, effectively shut down by high school students, and over 200 university and higher education departments around the country that have been taken over and shut down by university students. That is fairly massive. That's also going to run its course relatively soon as we get into winter break and into Christmas break. To what extent that will start again when school starts on January 7th is very much an unknown. The other thing that is really interesting is that yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, may have been the day before yesterday because of the time difference. Things change sometimes. There was a 16-year-old student who was shot. Fortunately,
in his hand, right?
In Perisperi, in Athens. And it's unclear as to who did it and for what purposes. There's conflicting reports, and honestly, I don't have a definitive sense of exactly what happened. But that has created or injected, as you say, a level of tension right now that right as when things were calming down, things are beginning to get very, very hot again. And that is rather unpredictable. Had it not been for the shooting, and the boy appears to be out of danger after surgery in the hospital, fortunately, had it not been that shooting, I would have said that a lot of it would have died down over break as a lot of the student actions calmed down a little bit and took a break, and things would have continued for months, probably for the duration of 2009, but in far less spectacular and dramatic fashions, but incidents would continue to go on. One of the things that is really, really clear is that there is a tremendous amount of hostility that has been unleashed towards the police, and the whole dynamic of police versus protesters and police versus society is very, very different. How that's going to play out is unclear. The other thing also is that most of the violence or the property destruction that took place in the streets was very targeted. It was targeted towards police stations, towards government offices, later on towards some political party and some union buildings, but also towards banks. I'm getting reports from people in some cities, smaller cities in Greece, that will tell me there's not a single bank in the entire city that has not been hit in one fashion or another. One of the slogans that emerged early on in that uprising that summarizes very well the feeling that a lot of people have about what government policy has been is money for the banks, bullets for the youth.
Well, Pavlos, on that note, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. I'd love to have you back on to follow up on the story as it unfolds.
Well, thank you very much, and I'd look forward to any other opportunities we have to talk about this.
Great. Thanks, Pavlos Stavropoulos, a Greek-American activist, telling us about what exactly is happening in Greece since the beginning of the month when a 15-year-old boy was shot and killed by police.